I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Jeremy Schoenwald here with another episode of Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast. Our podcast is produced by, and here's a big cliffhanger for you, Venture for America, a fellowship program for enterprising recent college graduates who launched their careers as entrepreneurs and helped to revitalize America's cities. After 5 weeks of training, VFA fellows spend 2 years in the trenches of a startup in an emerging U.S. city where they learn how to contribute to a high-growth business. Afterwards, VFA provides the mentorship, network, and resources fellows need to become entrepreneurs. To learn more about Venture for America, to support our work, or even to apply to become a fellow, please visit ventureforamerica.org. As I always note, I've been involved with VFA since its inception, and I'm a huge advocate. I sincerely wish it had been around when I graduated many years ago. Instead, I ended up launching the Mission Driven Group. Check out our firm at missiondrivengroup.com. And as for the podcast, you can like us and subscribe to us. And hey, why not even recommend us to a friend? Listenership is what keeps us going. So if you are a fan, please take some initiative. That'd be great. Today, we have Brian Brakeen on the show. Brian is the founder of Kairos, a human analytics company which specializes in facial recognition technology. Kairos's face analysis algorithms are able to recognize and understand how people feel in video, photos, and the real world. It's pretty cool. With Kairos, you can free yourself from flat data, make smart decisions, and reinvent how your business interacts with the world. Brian is an almost 20-year veteran of the tech industry, starting his career with IBM and moving up to the ranks via stints at Comcast and ultimately Apple, which was a position that he very much coveted, but he took a big risk, took the leap, left Apple, and started Kairos. I'm excited to connect with Brian because he's passionate about building his own firm. He's passionate about building Miami through entrepreneurship. He's brought VFA fellows to Miami, he and Kairos are creating jobs and opportunities in the area to the benefit of us all. We're very thrilled to have Brian Brakeen on the show today. But before we bring Brian on the show, I have to ask you, do you need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? Most entrepreneurs will tell you that developing a good web presence is essential to getting your business off the ground and acquiring new customers. If you have a new idea or just need to upgrade your website, check out Wix.com. No matter what sector you're in, Wix.com has something for you. With hundreds of designer-made, customizable templates to choose from, the drag-and-drop editor, there's just no coded needing. You don't need to be a programmer or a designer to create something beautiful. You can do it yourself with Wix.com. Used by more than 77 million people worldwide, Wix.com makes it easy to get your website live today. The best part, it's free. You can go to Wix.com and sign up for an entirely free account today. No credit card required. It's easy, and the result is stunning. Go to Wix.com today, and as Brian Brakeen will tell you, it's a company that he loves because they have a strong presence in Miami. So with that, here is our interview with Brian Brakeen.
Welcome to Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast.
Building things can be really hard, and entrepreneurship is often portrayed in the media as the sexy or even worse, easy career path. Through this series, we plan to pull back the curtain and tell the gritty stories of entrepreneurship. We're striving to create a relaxed environment where entrepreneurs feel free to tell their stories.
This is Smart People Should Build Things, the Venture for America podcast.
Okay, Brian, thanks so much for being here.
Good to be here today. Thanks for having me.
I definitely want to talk about you and about Kairos, but we have to discuss this, of course. Kairos has many identities, but for us, selfishly, we think of it as a VFA company. How did you hear about VFA, and how did Kairos become a VFA company?
I think we're first and foremost a VFA company these days. interesting. So a few years ago, when VFA was looking for cities to expand in, we were able to get their attention here in Miami, Florida. The Knight Foundation hosted them, and a gentleman named Hamad Hagman, who's spearheading a lot of the entrepreneurial events down here, called me and said, Brian, would you mind giving a couple of the folks down there at VFA a bit of a tour? And what was supposed to be a one-hour meeting ended up being a 4 or 5 hour drive all around Miami and South Beach, showing them where all the entrepreneurial activity was. And I think I was able to convince them to come.
So VFA's mission is to revitalize cities through entrepreneurship. You're a huge Miami booster and an example of homegrown innovation and technology leading to jobs and economic improvement and development in a city. Give me the argument for a tech firm locating to Miami as opposed to some of the places which are sort of better known as tech hubs.
Yeah, you know, I get that question a lot. And, you know, we're data geeks, as you can imagine, you know, being a facial recognition company. So the company actually started out west in San Francisco, and we moved the company back to Miami. And we did so after looking at a couple of data points, including cost of living for the employees, cost of doing business for the company, a number of developers that develop PHP, which is our stack, number of folks that are coming in and coming out. So we think this kind of constant churn of kind of new ideas and new people is certainly very important to any kind of in large ecosystem. And also number of investors. And Miami came in number one in every single category that we looked at. It was absolutely kind of a shock to us, particularly in the capital area. For a lot of the folks that are entering VFA and that are going to want to then move on to do their own business, it's really important to have a number of angel investors in a city to help you fund that early idea, right? California has one angel investor for every three companies. Florida has three angel investors for every one company. So it's the clear choice.
Did you have no ties to the Miami region at all? You just kind of said, look, let's do this analytically, and Miami came up. And you said, fine, Miami.
Kind of. I did live in Miami prior to that, but I didn't let that sway me. I'm originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, so I'm a Northeast guy. I moved to Miami for about a year before moving to California to work at Apple. So really no strong Miami ties until we got back.
Okay, you mentioned Philadelphia, your roots. Let's talk about you and Kairos, too. I looked at your resume. You seem to have gotten to where you are through old-fashioned hard work, seemingly an almost 20-year career with methodical progress. You know, you were a senior network technician at IBM, technical project leader at ADP. You know, it goes on and on. Finally, a senior project manager at Apple. And for so many, you know, Apple is like the top of the mountain, the most prestigious thing you can do. And you were there for almost 2 years after so much hard work. And I think that, like, we have a tendency to, there's obviously greater risk as you advance deeper in your career and your own personal prestige grows along with the firms that you work for. I mean, I guess it's a very long way of saying, how did you determine you could ever leave Apple, which was and remains such a juggernaut, to start something of your own?
It's so interesting. Apple was my goal probably all throughout my career. My very first computer was an Apple computer. The company continues to mean so much to me. And Steve Jobs' vision continues to be part of my own kind of guiding light and star. But I also realized in my time there that I had my own dreams and my own vision, and I really wanted to change the world, and that I couldn't do that by working on someone else's dream and someone else's vision. And so even though we had, chefs making our every meal, and we had Mercedes-Benz shuttles driving us around, and every ridiculous accoutrement you can imagine at a company, I just knew that to be truly happy, I had to stake it out on my own, and that's when I started Kairos.
Was it something that was always there? Like, were you biding your time throughout each one of these, waiting for the right idea, the right moment? Or was it something that just happened? Was it fortuitous? Like, oh, well, I'm at Apple, and now this idea came to me, and wow, it came to me at just the wrong time because I'm where I wanted to be my whole life, but obviously the right time because I want to do this. Tell me about your entrepreneurial, leanings and process throughout your career.
There's always that nature versus nurture question, and I think that's also true for me. To your point, all of my career, I'd always worked at large employers. I led large teams. Never had to worry about some of the P&L responsibility, but not any of the startup-y kind of challenges that a large organization kind of allows you that freedom. So, no, I really didn't. I was always the what I like to say, the problematic, talented and gifted person. So I always was so good that they couldn't fire me, but always asking too many questions, right? I was always the person saying, why do we do it this way? Why do we still do it this way? Why can't we change? So on and so forth. That capability served me well in my consulting years at IBM, but ultimately, it doesn't lead to kind of fulfillment in a large corporate environment. But I didn't know that I was an entrepreneur until much later in life. And then being in San Francisco, it kind of being around all that entrepreneurial spirit, I realized that, you know, I could do that too. And I had my own dreams and I had my own ambitions and, again, decided to kind of just go out and make a go of it.
You're a bit of an anomaly. You know, you don't have a college education. You know, Peter Thiel would probably be very proud of you. did that weigh on your decision making? Does it enhance the risk as you launch Kairos?
No.
Simple as that. That's the best answer on the show.
You know, I just I think my whole life I've always been a little different, and that's just another example of which, you know, I was adopted at a very early age, probably 6 months, 8 months old, by two amazing, loving parents, and they've always told me, Brian, do what you want. You know, we're always going to be here to support you. You're always going to have a roof to come home to if everything doesn't work out. And even though I left my job at IBM to go to Apple, where at the time Apple was not the juggernaut that it is today, right? So leaving Big Blue to go to a company that had only been bankrupt, you know, 8 or 9 years prior to that was not a clear indication of something that someone should do. My parents were always very supportive, including leaving Apple after it got big. And I said, hey, Mom and Dad, guess what? I'm going to leave Apple and start my own company. And they were like, oh, my God, kid, you're killing me. But, you know, we love you and we support you. And so because of that, I always felt that I could make these kinds of decisions, including attending Penn State for a couple semesters and saying it's not for me. They didn't like it, but they supported it. And that support and that love really is the reason why I've been successful.
Yeah, I think that I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs through the podcast and other venues, it's amazing to me how much more important support from a community is than sometimes money or like lots of other factors that go into a business when you start out. So that isn't surprising to me, and it's nice to hear you talk so personally about how important your family was. So I read about, you know, how scrappy things ultimately became with Kairos, but we'll get to that. I mean, you leave Apple. I mean, what is Kairos day one? I mean, did you have a ramp with it? Were you like, okay, I'm working on this evenings and weekends, and we're at a certain point where I can, or was it like, okay, I got to stop doing what I'm doing and start working on this right now and put together a team? Where were you, at go?
Wow. Well, so I think that if you look up the term scrappy, you certainly would find a picture of kind of us in the dictionary. We were very scrappy in the early days. I left Apple, sold some Kairos, some Apple stock. I also was consulting at the time. So I would work a couple of days a week consulting, take all that money, pour it into the business. Really, the first $250,000 in the business was actually my own. And then I was able to get some angel investors here in Miami to invest afterwards. So early on, it was everybody working nights, weekends, working a day job, working a consulting gig, just trying to keep it going, trying to keep the lights on, trying to keep this dream alive until we could get some investment.
So, yeah, you mentioned the investment. I read about it, and it seems like you just did like an endless number of networking events and coffees, and you know, had some good luck. But like when you look back, were you making a mistake, or is it just that hard to raise money?
It's hard to raise money. I'm going to definitely align myself with that statement. But people at the early stage are not betting on companies. People are betting on people. And really what I was doing, and I think what every early stage entrepreneur is doing, is getting to know people, taking every lunch, taking every meeting. If someone says they want to introduce you to somebody, following up, being on time, being courteous, being open, and being extremely raw and open about who you are. I mean, literally, if you can open your soul to someone, and this is easier said than done, but I'm a firm believer in this, only good things can come from that, because when people feel like they can understand the man or the woman, they're more likely to invest, and they're more likely to kind of, you know, go along with what you're trying to build.
So, you know, raising money can be so challenging, and you know, I'm curious if there was a snobbery from venture capitalists, like, real tech firms are in the Valley. What are you doing in Miami? Or even was there a snobbery towards your, the fact that, you know, you didn't have a college degree? You know, did you have those conversations? Did you sense that? How did you overcome that if you did?
So it's interesting. I'm both a beneficiary and hurt by pattern matching, right? And so, And just to, for those that don't know, pattern matching is this idea that, okay, you find something or someone who's been successful in the past, and you go out and try to find as many folks like that, and theoretically you can be as successful, right? And it gets to be a challenge when you're dealing with actual people, because we don't all look, sound, act, live in the same places, and that creates some you know, challenges, and that's putting it lightly. So My challenge at beneficiary side of pattern matching is, one, not having a college degree in the Valley is like a badge of honor. Someone who dropped out of college actually is an indicator of great success. Or they got the box, or they're willing to take risk. And in some ways, it's actually been helpful to my technical career. It doesn't help you in a banking career or a legal career, but it certainly helps you in a technical career. But two, where I don't kind of meet the pattern is, we're based in Miami, and San Francisco, or, you know, you can pick another city, is seen as the place. Interestingly enough, you know, we look at the number of investments, the venture capital invested, the number of firms. Miami has always been in the top five of at least in the last 5 years of number of startups in the country. It was number two last year. I think it was number two this year as well. It was number one a few years ago, so including in front of San Francisco. So sometimes a pattern doesn't really tell you the whole story, but you still have to kind of manage through that when you're trying to get investment.
You talked about running out of money, and I read this, and it truly gave me goosebumps. I'm going to let you read it, because I think you know what I'm talking about. So take it away.
Yeah, I remember talking to the team. I'll never forget this conversation. In fact, I often get emotional when telling this story. And I said, hey, guys, you know, you're going to get paid this Friday, but you're not going to get paid next Friday. I'm not sure when you're going to get paid again. And ultimately, you know, I failed you. It's my job to go out there and raise money and make sure we have the money we need for our operations. And I know that you guys have, you know, wives and husbands and children and bills and houses. And those things aren't going to get paid, you know, through my I'm sorry. And if you have to go and find a job, I will write you the greatest recommendation letter. We will always be friends for the end of time. But if you can stay, you know, and if you can help us build what we're building here, I promise you, I will give you every single thing, every hour, 60-hour weeks of my time until I make this right and until I can get this money for us to continue our operations. And it was a Friday. I remember going home for a very somber weekend. And I came in that Monday, and not a single person left, not even one. And I remember just it cementing in me that this business is all about people. Everything that we do is all about people. We talked about investors and their belief in what we're doing, employees with their belief in what we're doing. It's can you explain your idea, and can you have enough people believe in that idea to be successful? And so we'll never forget that as an organization. I owe everything to those people, and I won't forget it.
So my question to follow up is so matter of fact. I mean, obviously, it's a very emotional story. But you know, like how long did this payroll roller coaster go on? Like, how did it begin, and how long did it go on for?
I think that time it was, and it's there been more than one, but I think that time was probably about 4 to 6 weeks.
And was there, obviously you had no visibility into when it would end. How did you manage such a volatile period? I mean, what kind of toll did it take on you personally? I mean, were you tossing and turning, you know, were you able to get a wink of sleep? You know, tell me about the emotions with you and with others. I mean, were there others who said, okay, I can give you another week, but that's it. I mean, just give us some of that real human drama. And I'm glad it worked out, obviously.
Yeah, no one ever, no one came and I mean, there's real strong belief on this team in what we're doing and our impact on the world. You know, we're really doing this to make a dent in the universe. And people would do it for free if they could, you know, ultimately, and as I would. You know, so I think we were always kind of very aligned. No one ever came to me with any questions about leaving. But I will say that there is that kind of up at night phenomenon you mentioned, you know, a bit of insomnia. Though insomnia can be an entrepreneur's best friend. You can get a lot of work done in the middle of the night with no emails coming back to you. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, I am ultimately responsible for, I believe, every employee and their families. And that's a serious responsibility that I take quite seriously. And it isn't always to my kind of mental or physical health's benefit. This isn't a job for the faint of heart, certainly. But when you think about how you can impact people's lives in a positive way, it's worth the challenges.
We're talking to Brian Brakeen here, and we're talking, you know, he founded Kairos, which is very sophisticated facial recognition software, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But I think one thing that, you know, we can agree is that facial recognition needs to be pretty complex. But if you're building your own website to start your own company, it can often be very, very simple, and you can even do it yourself, like one would with Wix.com. No matter what business you're in, you can get your site live today. It's simple to customize. If you don't know how to code, that's not a problem. There's no coding needed. Millions of entrepreneurs create their own professional websites using Wix.com, and the results are stunning. Wix gives you access to hundreds of customizable templates and easy drag-and-drop tools you can get up and running today. You can go to Wix.com and sign up for an entirely free account today. No credit card required. Go to Wix.com today. So, Brian.
I'll just add there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Coming out of the break, Wix.com has a Latin American headquartered office in Miami.
There, nice. Okay, that's a good unity to end my bit there. I like that. So let's talk about the use cases for facial recognition software. Like on your site, you know, it's like market research, fraud detection, policing, and more. You have more than 300 different firms using Kairos technology. Are things clustered in one area, or is it really? What are the, you know, explain the diversity of uses and how they're arranged by customer.
Interestingly enough, and just to give you a sense of how fast we've grown, wherever you found that number 300, and it's probably not that old, maybe a couple years old, we now have 9,000 customers in 40.
Whoa,
that's how different it's. Yeah, it's we're growing exponentially, and that's kind of the fun of startup. Those use cases are all over the place. So in healthcare environments, if you say you come into a hospital, you're unconscious, maybe you're schizophrenic, you have some other kind of mental health issue, and you really can't even get across your own name because you're unconscious in the back of an ambulance. Doctors can now use facial recognition, pull up an iPad or an iPhone, and pull your medical record just purely from your face. We're doing things in the event and the photo space. If you get onto a cruise ship or you go to a theme park, walk up to a kiosk, facial recognition, and then all the pictures of you on different rides, you know, shows up. We're doing things in the financial services space. When you go to purchase something like on a Square device or something like a mobile payment device, using the front-facing camera to verify it really is you that is using your credit card, virtually eliminating credit card fraud and mobile payments. So we're just doing a number of very interesting things. We also do emotion detection. And so for our advertising customers, we will show people advertisements, paid panelists. We'll show them advertisements. We will read their emotions as they're watching the ad and report back to the advertiser what the good parts were, what the bad parts were, where it fell flat, and what they can do to improve the advertisement. So we're doing a number of different things all around humanity.
Is there a favorite use of yours? I mean that what you just said about the ambulance to me is just like mind blowing. I mean, is there an example of yours where you're like, wow, this is like just an amazing and helpful use of our technology that I'm really proud of?
You know, we love the things that help people, and I've got a use that we don't even get paid for. We donate our services in a couple of cases, and our team loves it, and they work super hard on these use cases. There's one in India called Helping Faceless, and I invite your listeners to Google them. A group of just a small team in India that there's a huge problem with child kidnapping and trafficking, where children are kidnapped in the countryside, brought to the city, and sold to beggars who use those children to essentially get more money from people because they have a child with them. They're more likely to get money. It's an absolutely abhorrent practice. Oh. And they were using facial recognition off-the-shelf, freeware-type stuff, and weren't very successful. They created this app helping faceless. People just basically install on their phone, take a picture of the beggar and the child. The image was searched against the National Missing Children's Database, and then the geolocation is sent to the police saying, that child was in this very spot. Please, you know, come save them. But it wasn't working because they were using such poor facial recognition. We put them on our best algorithm, the one that we sell for the highest amount of money for free, and they've been able to save six children. And it's things like that that just makes us get up in the morning, to be honest.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it sounds like unspeakably amazing to think that you developed a software that can allow for children to be liberated. I mean, I'm not even sure what I can say beyond that. I'm curious about, like, you know, you talk about the 300 firms did you say 9,000 now?
We're 9,000, correct.
That's that growth is crazy. And I'm curious, like, you know, you go from this very tenuous reality where it's like you might not even make payroll to, you know, a trickle and then obviously flow. Like, was there a moment, like, what was the moment where you're like, you know what, we're going to make it. This is over. And was there like one client where you're like, wow, you know, I don't know, whoever it is, you know, Goldman Sachs is using us now. Like that, we're here. You know, when did you know you were going to make it?
It's so funny because startup is so binary. There probably was a moment like that, but I never got to enjoy it because it feels like it went from, oh my God, are we going to exist, to, oh my God, how are we going to handle all these customers?
Right.
There's very little time in between. So I don't know if I ever got to that kind of blissful utopian moment. that's kind of where I am now. How do I handle growth? How do we manage our teams, and how do we manage growth in a way that is, you know, we keep it going, but we're also kind of being fair to ourselves and to our investors. And it's a classic struggle.
Have there been times where you had to turn away clients?
We haven't turned any clients away yet, but I can say that we've had to slow them down in some cases, and I don't like doing that. So
right.
You know, we're venture-backed. You know, we've raised $6 million so far. We're out here trying to raise another $7 to $10 million now. We're having some decent success. And so after we close that round, we'll be doubling the size of our staff, and we'll just continue to grow.
So I'm curious also about the sales. Like, how do you go into a massive corporate bureaucracy and selling in, you know, like selling in software? I'm not a technical guy, but I imagine that has all sorts of risks, you know, with the security departments of these big firms who are, I don't know, concerned about that. I don't know, you know, they don't have the same safety mechanisms or whatever it is. I imagine there's just a lot of red tape and you tell me if I'm wrong, certainly, but I mean, how do you go about creating urgency and making someone want to buy this, to buy, you know, Cairo software at a big company?
Our secret sauce is we don't. So you cannot convince someone who doesn't see the value in a product like ours to go out and do all these things and overcome the technical or security kind of concerns that they may have. It's a very, very, very difficult sale. So what we do is we make ourselves available to be found and discovered when you need a solution. All of our customers are inbound. So all 9,000 of those that we just talked about were inbound from the internet and from other sources. And then we sell to customers who want our service as opposed to trying to convince others they need it.
You must have a very happy sales team if all clients are inbound.
Yeah, happy and busy, a mixture.
So, you know, in April 2015, you completed, you know, what's reported to have been a $2.7 million acquisition of IMRSV. Is there am I missing some sort of clever pronunciation of that? Immersive. Oh, there we go. What am I? I'm okay. I am definitely missing a clever pronunciation of that. There we go. I need my vowels. So
yeah, you had enough school, you need vowels to pronounce that.
You've raised $5 million. Like, I mean, this seems like a bet the farm acquisition. I mean, did you feel that way?
I feel like every decision in at this stage is bet the farm, to be honest with you. We just don't have enough. It was before recently. We didn't have enough time or resource to make a lot of mistakes. And so part of this job is having a really high batting average and being really strong and convicted, open-minded enough to listen to other points of view, but convicted in your ultimate decisions. And so, yeah, we felt very strongly that it was the right thing for our company. And now that product represents about 40% of our revenue. So, yeah, it was ultimately the right thing to do. And we did our homework. We thought it was a great company. And I think we made the right decision.
Yes, I mean, so tell me about the thought process. Like, what made you determine that this just had to be done? You had to acquire Immersive. I want to say it again. That way, this time I get it right.
Well, we think, you know, we see a world where a lot of people do a lot of different things around people counting, you know, facial recognition, emotion. We want to be your kind of one-stop shop. You know, we believe that there will be come a time when people want to go to one platform and say, this is the platform we use for people. And it knows everything. It knows blinks. It knows eye tracking. It knows this. It knows that. It just, if it's people, we go to Kairos. And so ultimately, a lot of these disciplines in computer vision can be somewhat different branches of the same tree. Same core tech, but different branches. And so we need to make acquisitions. That isn't our last. We'll probably do. We did two last year acquisitions. We'll do at least one or two this year, and until we're an IPO.
So, I mean, in so many negotiations, interest drives up the price. How do you? You've done it. You've done three acquisitions now, I think, is what you just said. So, how do you manage an acquisition?
Delicately. You know, it's a mixture of numbers. It can get to be bravado sometimes. It can get to be personalities. You got to find a way to kind of get it back to just the numbers. You have to build, you know, again, relationships. You got to be a good communicator. That particular skill of mine, communication and relationship building, has served me in every role I've ever been in, and it serves me to double time in this role. But you can kind of create a sense of trust, then a lot of things can be done. Lack of trust slows down business greatly. And so if you can build trust, and again, you do that, I think, by being brutally honest about yourself, your shortcomings, and the truths and things about things, you can really get a lot of business done really quickly.
And is this one of the responsibilities that you have? I mean, are you the guy who's leading, who's identifying the strategy and saying, we want to acquire that, and I'm going to lead the acquisition? Is it you and a team of lawyers in gray suits? Who does the acquiring?
Correct. I do the M&A and manage the acquisitions. Of course, we have a team that is amazing of lawyers, our CFO, you know, our internal team, our technical team to vet the quality of a solution. But yeah, I manage the M&A process.
And you have team members in Miami and London. Are they legacy of an acquisition from the ones in London?
Correct. We bought a design firm in London called The Spreads. We moved the employees to Miami. So they're all in Miami now.
They're all in Miami now.
In Singapore as well, though, that we worked for Immersive.
And, you know, like, it's notable that you managed international workforces for you built technology that manages international workforces for Apple. But what's the secret for keeping a team in Singapore really unified with a team in Miami?
Well, culture. You know, there's a number of psychological evaluations you can do on somebody, but there are certain personality types that don't require micromanagement, and I'm not a micromanager. So I know that about myself, and I've gone out and hired people that really thrive in a very open and free and non-micromanaged environment. The more freedom I give the team, the more that they deliver, to be honest.
And in terms of, you know, like the growth of clients, you know, 0 to 300 to 9,000, what about the growth of staff? How have you managed the growth of staff? And you're saying you try and give people a lot of leeway, but how do you ramp up and make sure that in a fragile environment where something can go, you know, a couple of hires go wrong, it can sink the ship. I mean, what kind of process do you have around that?
You know, I'm pretty – that's my background. Let's start with that. So my career has kind of been in HR systems, HR management, back office, that kind of thing. So this is the one area of this business that I actually have the most experience in is people. But then beyond that, I have made my mistakes in hiring. And ultimately, I believe in servant leadership. So ultimately, any hire that didn't work out is my responsibility. I failed that person. They didn't fail us. I didn't give them enough support. Maybe I hired the wrong person. But I take that upon myself, and I'm very reflective about the times that we've had to let people go. Because we work in an environment where it's very, very open, we don't have any standard hours. You have to be in the office. There's no required, okay, come in at 9, leave at 5, that kind of thing. You know, if I don't see you for a week, that's fine. You have a responsibility to the organization and to your fellow coworkers, and I want to see that responsibility, you'll see that through. And I'm here to support you and help you, but it's really for you to drive that across the finish line. And in that environment, people will always either work up to or down to your expectation. I learned that over my long career. The people, the organizations that micromanage every single minute had the most problems, and the organizations that allow for the largest flexibility had the least HR problems of any of my customers, absolute least. So if you hold people to a higher standard, they will work up to that standard. And that's what we do at Kairos.
So this is my magic wand question that I like to ask. You know, aside from the funding, which you're working on, if you could wave your magic wand and make a problem as a founder or manager, owner, president, go away, what would it be at this point? What's your pain point?
There's a bias. Is it okay? The answer, the short and long answer is, people have a cognitive bias toward the negative, right, and toward the extreme. So this actually kind of goes way back to the African savannas. Like, the person that was looked up and was worried about the rustling in the bushes because there might be a lion there and ran first, they lived. And the person that was like, oh, I wonder what that is, they died, right? So it makes sense that we all have this cognitive bias for the extreme and for the negative. That said, if I could wave a magic wand and remove that bias from people, one, I think they would actually, even though we're selling a ton of product now, we would sell 10 times as much because there'd be less of a concern about kind of the big brotherism. They would kind of trust and see us as the positive force in the world that we believe that we are. Two, I think investors would have less of a bias for why you're building an extremely technical firm in Miami versus San Francisco. I think that they could see Miami for what it was and for this amazing place that actually 7,000 people move to Miami every single week, and the vast majority have a bachelor's degree or above. Unfortunately, we're losing people with less degrees, and we're gaining people that have more degrees. But it's a great place to get talent, and if people could actually see Miami for the amazing, growing metropolitan city that it is, and move beyond this idea of beaches, sun, and bikinis, I think that, you know, we would do better as a company, and we would do better as a city as well. So removing bias is what I would do with my magic wand.
And to go back to the fundraising, things have changed in the last little while. You know, every day there's a story about you know, venture capitalists becoming a little gun shy. I mean, have you felt that change? Are things tougher out there for you? You've obviously got this spectacular growth. What's it like out there?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely hitting us more, not in the will we do a deal or not with you, because I think we have enough kind of traction and it's interesting enough space that we get venture capital. I think that it's the valuations are hit. As the unicorns have been kind of cut down to size, that trickles down to the Series A folks like ourselves. So, yeah, I feel it in the valuation sense.
One last question, and then I want to, because we got someone who clearly has a window into the future, and so I want to. This is a sort of a rarity for us where we ask someone to bring out their crystal ball, but I want to ask a question that Andrew Yang, the founder of VFA, you know, talks about how people shape businesses, but businesses also, over the long run, shape people, and people change because they're businesses. You know, how do you feel like your company has changed you since you started it?
I am more confident, I think, a person. I enjoy, I've always had a public speaking background, but I certainly enjoy it more. I enjoy thought leadership. And so I think it's really made me a better and more confident person. But it also, at the same exact time, hasn't changed me at all. You know, I've been into servant leadership well before I founded Kairos. I've been into serving my fellow men. I mean, I'm from Philadelphia, right? The city of brotherly love, right? I mean, it is who we are as Pennsylvanians. And we have if you know anything about like Pennsylvania Quakers and coming together and sitting in all of our like Quaker schools are called friends schools. We are obscenely nice people in Pennsylvania. We pride ourselves on that. And I think that part of me will never change. I've just been able to kind of build that Pennsylvania spirit into my Miami-based technical startup.
Okay, so we're talking about the past. We're talking about, you know, Philadelphia, you know, being at the bedrock of the country. Let's talk about the future. You know, it's interesting to me. I know there's so many uses for Kairos, and then it's not just technology. But I mean, you know, is there a future for the cumbersome password that we're all forgetting and constantly having to be, you know, have to forget your password, send it to your email? Or is that going to be gone in a couple of years from now? Will it all be scans?
Absolutely going to be gone. And pretty much anything in your life that you find annoying will not exist. I mean, because you're not the only person that has that pain, and there is money in solving these pains, you know. So you'll see more and more applications. Apple just made open their biometric sensor. So like I have an ADT security system, for instance, and to log into it, I use my thumb. No more passwords, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's a number of different ways that biometrics are changing our world. There aren't going to be fingerprint readers on every device everywhere, but our face will always be present. And there are more and more cameras in the world. So we believe that facial recognition is going to be the platform of choice, particularly in mobile and particularly it's very global in its nature. It solves a problem that all humanity has that isn't unique to the Americas. And so 40% of our customers come from other countries. We got 800 web hits from Russia. We've got 500 web hits from Argentina in the last month, that kind of thing. We just think that we're really poised to change not just the lives of folks here in the U.S. in a way that some of our kind of more, we'll say, you know, caviarish tech firms that people are starting now do. We think that we're solving real, deeper human challenges, and we can solve those challenges across the globe.
Anybody who listens to the show will know that I'm kind of self-deprecating about my own use of technology. I got on Twitter last week or a couple weeks ago for the first time, like stuff like that. I sort of, you know, enjoy thinking of myself as a bit of a Luddite. But even every time I use a key to open a door every time I use a passport at the airport, I'm like, why? This just seems like such obvious technology to go. And I mean, even like keys right now, like isn't there something now that could prevent us from walking around with keychains? Or is there something else that needs to happen, in order for us to achieve that?
No, there are no less than 10 facial recognition door unlock products on the market. I mean, it's already happening. It's just a matter of checking it out. And I would hope, now that you're getting more and more technical, just tell me that when you sign up for Twitter, you change your icon from the Twitter egg icon. That's just not done.
I don't know if I did. I'll have to check. I'll get back to you on that. I think I did. I think I put a photo of my wife and I instead of that, if I recall.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, welcome to the
So, I mean, this has been a lot of fun. I mean, we're talking about the future. What's Kairos' future? Where do you want to see Kairos? Do you guys have a very well-defined strategic plan where you want to see, you know, X milestone hit and then Y milestone hit and then Z milestone hit? What's in the future for Kairos?
We'll have an exit in 3 to 4 years. That exit could be IPO. In fact, that's our plan. It certainly could be acquisition. But we'll exit in 3 to 4 years. I would love to be the CEO of a publicly traded company. That means a lot to me. But I'm also happy to be senior vice president at Google and have a ton of money in the bank. So either one would be just fine. I also think as an organization, you know, we have a large number of women for a tech startup. I think, you know, we're over 50%, and we're very proud of that. And I want to see that continue. I think that getting more and more women into not just Kairos, but tech in general is critically important for our generation and for this country. And so we do a lot of work in the community with like Girls Who Code, Black Girls Code, other organizations. There's a great Latina code group here in Miami. And we just want to see more and more women participating in the future.
That's a fantastic place to wrap. I mean, we take a lot of pride in that at VFA, and on the podcast in particular. I'm going to go look at the numbers, but we're getting pretty close to 50% in terms of men and women as guests on the show. So that's a mission both of us can take up.
Considering there's 50% of the population, it's just about where it should be. So
yeah, absolutely. Brian Brekeen, thank you so much for sharing the time, and we owe you an apology because we screwed up with technology once and had to cancel, and even today was a little delayed. So thanks so much for being a great sport and for joining us today.
Good to be here. The pleasure is all mine. So proud of the work VFA is doing and excited to have him in Miami.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.